Welcome to Hot Girls Code, a podcast all about the tech industry, software development, and being a woman in tech. I'm your host, Lola.
And I am your host, Orti. Today's episode is going to be a classic Hot Girls Code episode, all about breaking down jargon and showing you that fancy sounding complex concepts and ideas are actually pretty straightforward when they're explained to you in a way that works well for you.
Absolutely. We are going to be talking all about object-oriented programming. And yep, even the name itself sounds kind of vague and confusing, but do not fear, because by the end of the episode, you will be an expert. But before we jump into the world of object-oriented programming, as always, let's get in our Zen zone by expressing some gratitude. So, Orti, what are you grateful for this week?
I am grateful for the fact that we live in New Zealand, and specifically because New Zealand actually has the world's largest international dark sky reserve. And you might be like, what the heck is that? So basically, I took a trip recently to a place called Tekapo here in New Zealand, and I did some stargazing. And it was absolutely beautiful and absolutely amazing. And the reason that stargazing is particularly great in this area of New Zealand and this area of the world is because it has got a bunch of like rules and initiatives and stuff to help keep the light pollution low. So like when you're driving in the streets, all the like street lamps are really low to the ground, so they're not like bouncing too much light into the atmosphere. And so what I got to do was I got to go up a mountain called Mount John, and we went to this area on the mountain, and we got to do some like absolutely gorgeous like stargazing and look at the Milky Way. And it was insane because you look at the night sky, like we're from Auckland, there's a lot of light pollution, and so you look up and you see stars and you're like, yep, that's pretty cool, it's pretty pretty. But like here I could see so many stars, more than I've ever seen in my life, and you could see the Milky Way, like the clouds of it and stuff, and it was just so gorgeous. And I'm just so grateful that we live in a country that has something like that. And yeah, when I was doing this little stargazing thing, I found out that's actually the world's largest star sky reserve. So yeah, I'm feeling very grateful for that.
Lake Tekapo is so beautiful as well. Like, it's surrounded by mountains. It's obviously got like a beautiful lake. And then the fact that it's also this night sky reserve is just pretty magical.
I know, it's so amazing. And what about you, Lola? What are you feeling grateful for today?
Okay, so I'm feeling grateful for two very separate things today. Firstly, I'm feeling grateful for smoothie bowls, because I just friggin' adore smoothie bowls. Like, if I'm, you know, if it's lunchtime and I haven't done meal prep, then I'm just like, easy, let's chuck some berries, some banana, some protein powder, all in a bowl, chuck it with some nice like granola, and you're good to go. And I'm not gonna lie, I was sick last week and I didn't really feel like eating, you know, when you're sick and you just kind of don't want to eat. So I didn't eat dinner, but I did eat smoothie bowls, and it was just very soothing for my sore throat. And I am just feeling very grateful that whoever invented smoothie bowls did invent them, because what a fantastic idea. The other thing that I'm grateful for is Olivia Rodrigo's new album, because it is just full of bangers and it just really slaps.
You know, I was going to be like, Lola, you kind of have two things you're grateful for, but I 100% agree. We will make an exception for Guts. It is like such an amazing, iconic album. Before this episode, Lola and I were talking about how much we've been obsessed with this album recently. And I know by the time this episode comes out, it's been out for a while, but I'm sure I'll still be playing it on repeat. So now that we're feeling very grateful and zen, although I don't know how zen we are for listening to Guts by Olivia Rodrigo, let's dive into today's episode. We're going to be explaining what object-oriented programming is and the four principles that make it so efficient and so organized.
This is a pretty exciting one, folks, so let's get into it. Starting off with what object-oriented programming actually is. So object-oriented programming, which is commonly referred to as just OOP, is one of the most popular programming paradigms out there. And already, that brings us to our first piece of fancy jargon, programming paradigms. These are just different ways to organize a software program, or even a coding language itself, and it gives people structures, features, and opinions about how common programming problems should be tackled.
Just like with different styles of writing poetry, you also have different styles of writing code.
Yeah, like, you know how in school your English teacher would be like, okay, class, today we are going to be writing poems. And then they would let you know what type of poem you're writing. Like, maybe today it's a haiku or, you know, a simple acrostic poem. Programming paradigms are kind of like that.
I have a bit of a controversial opinion. I personally believe that poems that don't rhyme, I don't know if I see the point in them. Like, I just think I understand there's lots of like imagery and like metaphors and stuff, but when poems don't rhyme, that just doesn't seem fun to me. Like, where's the fun in that?
If it doesn't read like Dr. Seuss, then it's not a real poem.
Exactly. It's got to be like, you know, and you know, you can't say he didn't make some impactful work because all the places you'll go you know, absolutely iconic book. And guess what? It all rhymes. Therefore, great poem.
The logic holds up. But back to programming paradigms. OOP is just one type of programming paradigm. There are actually lots of other ones out there, like functional programming, imperative programming, declarative programming, and honestly, so many others. If you want to know more about something like functional programming, let us know over on our Instagram. But today, we are focusing on OOP because it's one of the most popular and well-known programming paradigms, as well as one of the first ones that people learn.
And not only that, there are lots of coding languages that are used with OOP, like Java, Python, and C++. So if any of those interest you, it'll be super helpful to understand what OOP is. So OOP is a way of writing code where we think about the things in our code as objects that have certain qualities and do certain actions. And then we use those objects to build up complex programs. And don't worry, this can sound a bit confusing and very abstract, so we're going to break it down a little bit more.
Side comment, instead of saying OOP, can we just say oop?
Oop.
Oop. No, let's not say that. In OOP, you'll sometimes hear people talking about classes. And this isn't classes as in the lessons that your English teacher gives you or anything like that. Instead, classes in this context are like a blueprint that tells a computer how to create an object, and it defines what an object should look like and also what that object can do.
So let's say we're making a piece of software for a virtual pet.
Ooh, like a Tamagotchi.
I was thinking a bit more like a virtual pet based off real animals to make the example easier to follow. But also, can we please take a second to talk about Tamagotchis? Because I was obsessed with them as a child.
Where did Tamagotchis go? Like, are they still around?
I wonder if they are. And like, and not only is it like, oh, are they still popular? But where did the old Tamagotchis go? Like, I remember I used to like save up any money that I had made or any money that I was given. And I would buy like, I had like 3 or 4 Tamagotchis because do you remember how they like, one of the versions, like they could visit each other and leave each other gifts and stuff.
You like put them near each other and then they could like go to each other's houses.
Yeah, exactly. And so I would do that. So that, and then I remember I used to actually take care of my friends' Tamagotchis if they were like going on holiday. Like, I remember there was this girl in my class who was going on vacation, so she couldn't take her Tamagotchi. So she literally left it with me. And I remember there was like one school holiday and I had like all these Tamagotchis. My parents were like, did you steal these? Like, why do you have so many? And I'm like, no, I'm taking care of them. And I'm sure they were just like, okay then, weirdo.
That's so wholesome. I was obsessed with just like how many different variations of Tamagotchi were out there. Like, I remember there was like a Tamagotchi website and I used to go on it and just look at all the different kinds of Tamagotchi, and I'd like try and like create my own, you know, being all creative expression.
I wish, I love that. But enough about Tamagotchis, and let's get back to our equally adorable non-Tamagotchi virtual pets. For these virtual pets, we might have a class called dog, and it may say that all dogs have a name, breed, and age. When we actually want to create a dog object, we create an instance of the dog class, and this just means we create a dog object using the blueprint defined in the class. So let's say we're creating an instance for a dachshund named Barbie. The dachshund object is created from the dog class, and it would have the name Barbie, the breed dachshund, and age of 4.
You know what I like to call them? Sausage dogs, because that's what they are. They're dogs that are shaped like a sausage. And I didn't realize up until this moment right now just how badly I want a sausage dog named Barbie.
That would be pretty amazing and very on brand for you. But let's say you're not a fan of sausage dogs and you want to create a different dog object for maybe my personal favorite, a corgi this time. You would use the same class and create another instance, and this time the name would be Queenie, for example, the breed would be Corgi, and the age would be 2.
These common descriptors, like name, breed, and age, are known as attributes. Attributes are defined in the class and they represent the state of an object, which basically just means that they tell us information about the object at a specific moment. And of course, that state can sometimes change. So like when Queenie has her birthday and she has her little dog party to celebrate, the state of the age attribute would change from 2 to 3.
So all objects made from a class will have all the mandatory attributes defined in that class. So all the dogs in our program will have a name, breed, and age associated with them. And this makes it easier for our program to treat all objects that are made from the dog class in a similar way, without having to write out code to handle a bunch of different scenarios. Like, we know if we want to find out how old a dog is, we can just check its age attribute. That's simple, right? Because we know that all dogs in our program have to have an age attribute.
But it's not just these attributes that get defined in the class. We also define a thing called methods. Methods are just a block of code that's only run when it's called. They are functions that are defined inside a class, and they tell us about the behavior of the objects created by that class. So with our dog class, we would have methods for things the dog can do, like bark or fetch. And when we call the bark method on our lovely sausage dog Barbie, Barbie barks.
And just like with attributes, this makes it easier for our program to interact with objects created from the dog class in a similar way, without needing to write out lines and lines of code. Instead, we can just call the bark method in whatever dog you're acting on, and it does it. The other cool thing about methods is the code is reusable, so anytime you want your dog to bark, you can just recall the bark method rather than writing out all the code that's contained in that method.
We're covering a few different ideas in today's episode, so let's summarize what we've talked about so far, because we know this could be a lot to take in. In object-oriented programming, aka OOP, we treat the things in our code as objects. We make these objects from our classes, which act as blueprints, and these classes contain attributes, which describe our object's state, like name, breed, or age, and they also contain methods, which are actions that our class can perform, like bark or fetch.
Now that we understand the basics of object-oriented programming, let's dig a little bit deeper into the important concepts that make it useful. As we said before, object-oriented programming is a programming paradigm, which just means it's a way to organize software. In OOP, a big part of this is through the 4 main principles: encapsulation, abstraction, inheritance, and polymorphism. Yes, I know, some more jargon, yay!
There are literally just so many gross, long words, but don't worry, because as always, we'll show you that there are way simpler concepts behind the scary words.
These 4 principles are like the foundations of OOP, and we promise they are not as intimidating as they sound. So let's break them down one by one. And first up, we have the principle of encapsulation. Now, encapsulation is all about keeping secrets.
Remember how your class has attributes and methods? Well, we don't want everyone in the whole system to be able to access everyone else's attributes and methods. You know, some things our objects just want to keep for themselves. Imagine if someone could make your dog bark whenever they wanted to. That would be pretty annoying. So you might not want to have the bark methods available publicly for anyone to call.
So these secret attributes and methods are set to private, and other objects aren't able to see them or make any changes. Instead, the object will have specific public methods to give others access to the parts that are okay to share. For example, to make sure another object can't accidentally change the name of the dog, you wouldn't ever allow another object to have access to the place where your dog's name is. Instead, you'd create a public method called getName, and that gives other objects a reference to your dog's name, meaning they can see it and retrieve it, but they aren't able to actually touch it or change anything.
If you're still a little bit lost and confused about encapsulation, another way you can think about it is like a diary. When you have a diary with all of your deepest, heartfelt secrets inside, you don't want just anyone to read it, right?
I mean, I definitely don't. Like, I haven't kept a diary in a while, but I'm pretty sure, like, if I looked through my, like, 13-year-old self's diary, like, I don't want just anyone looking at that.
One of my diaries when I was, like, 12 or 13 literally just had pictures of One Direction all over the cover. And then I also remember writing a diary when I was, like, this was when I was in primary school, so I was probably, like, 8 or 9 or something, and I vividly remember writing a song about the boy I had a crush on. And I remember part of how it went, and oh my god, it was like, he's standing there, yeah, yeah.
Whoa, so poetic.
That was all I remember. I think that's probably all I wrote. So that's why we definitely want to keep our secrets safe and not let just anyone read our diaries. So normally in that situation, you might put a lock on your diary and only you have the key. This means that only you can control who has access to the secrets that you've stored inside.
This is kind of like what encapsulation is doing. You lock away the data of your object, and your public methods are like a key to access and modify that data safely.
Right, so if you wanted to just scribble out everything in your diary, you know, absolutely wreck it, you can do that because you're the owner. So an object can change its own data, for example, deleting parts of it, whenever it wants to. But if someone else tries to do the same, they can only do it if they have a public method that they can use to delete that data. Just like in real life, they would need the key to your diary to access those secret pages that they want to scribble on.
And just like in life, setting these boundaries is really important to help keep your objects safe and avoid unintended data corruption.
On top of that, it also helps your objects to be separated from other parts of your code, and that makes testing and troubleshooting your code way easier, since you know the only way other parts of your code can interact with your object is through those public methods.
So, enough about encapsulation, let's move on to the next principle of OOP, and that is abstraction. And I feel like this is one of the ones that feels the most relatable to everyday life. Abstraction in programming is just like using your camera app without knowing exactly how it works inside. When you press the button to take a photo, you don't need to know all the technical stuff that happens behind the scenes, you just want to take the photo. And that's the same with programming. We use abstraction to simplify things.
In real life, we hide the complex inner workings of a machine with things like buttons or coverings. But in programming, we create objects that do specific jobs, but the rest of our code doesn't need to know the complicated stuff that goes on inside of them, under the hood. They just need to have a good enough understanding to use them.
And how does it do this? Well, that actually relates back to encapsulation. Remember how we said other objects can only interact with an object through its public methods? Well, when we apply abstraction, that just means those public methods should only be specific, high-level mechanisms that other objects actually care about, rather than just absolutely everything you can do with an object.
For example, let's jump back to our virtual pets. Let's say that you want to give your virtual pet a treat. Without abstraction, you might need methods for, you know, walking to the cupboard, reaching for the treat bag, opening the treat bag, taking the treat out, putting the bag back, bending down to your dog, and finally giving them the treat. Then the dog needs to open its mouth, close its mouth, chew the treat, and swallow it. That's a lot of information, right? Well, with abstraction, instead you would hide those inner details away, and maybe we'd just have a public method to get our treat and a method to feed the treat to our dog, which is much easier to absorb.
By doing things this way, it's easier to work in and maintain different objects. This is because you don't need to know absolutely everything about every object your object interacts with. and instead, you just need to know the high-level methods that it interacts with. So for our previous example, you don't need to know all the little steps about feeding your dog a treat. You can just call the feed treat method and bam, you've got it.
Basically, abstraction is great because it means hiding all of the nitty-gritty stuff happening behind the scenes and only showing you what's relevant for you to know. Now that we know about encapsulation and abstraction, let's move on to our third principle, which is inheritance. And to explain this principle, let's again jump back to the virtual pets we spoke about earlier.
Now, here at Hot Girls Code, we believe in building inclusive systems. So we don't want to just cater to the dog people out there. We also want to cater to the cat people. So we want to add cats to our systems. Cats and dogs have some similar things that they do, or similar methods we might want to implement, like they both sleep and they both eat. And you don't really want to have to write the code out for sleeping and eating twice if it's going to be exactly the same. But even though cats and dogs have some things that are the same, they also have other actions that are unique to each animal. For example, dogs bark, whereas cats meow. So they can't both be created from the exact same class. And that is where inheritance comes in.
I love that that's like the main difference between cats and dogs. Like, dogs bark, cats meow.
Every other way, they're the same.
But classes can be created in a hierarchy. So you can have a parent class, which has some attributes and methods, and then you can create child classes from that parent class, which inherit those attributes and methods. And then you can just add any extra functionality on top of them. This means that instead of having to copy and paste the code for eating and sleeping for both cats and dogs, and you know, any other pets you might want to add in the future.
Like maybe hamsters.
Ooh, maybe we'll add guinea pigs next. Instead, you can use the shared logic from a higher level pet class.
So for our virtual pet example, we'd make a parent class called pet, and this would have the methods for sleeping and eating. And then we'd have a dog class that is a child of pet, and a cat class that is another child of pet. So when we create our cat Snowy, for example, she has the sleep and eat methods that she's inherited from her parent class, as well as the meow method that we would have implemented in the cat class.
With inheritance, all of those publicly available methods of the parent class are available to the child classes. But not only that, it also allows you to replace the parent class methods implementation within the child class. For example, let's say that you had a method called pat in your pet class, but your cats probably don't want to be patted the same way as your dogs. Like, have you ever tried to give a cat a belly rub? Because unless that cat's in like an exceptionally good mood, it's pretty much just an invitation to get scratched. Well, the cool thing with inheritance is that your cat child class can override the pat method of the pet parent class. So you can write code to pat your virtual cat in a way that suits cats better. Like, from my experience, behind the ears or under the chin are the best options with cats, like less likely to get scratched. This whole concept is called polymorphism, and that brings us to our final core principle of OOP.
Polymorphism is a very fancy sounding word, but we promise it's not as scary as it sounds and it can all be explained with cats and dogs.
The only way to explain things, really.
Honestly, I feel like I would learn everything a lot better if it was explained through cats and dogs. So going back to our virtual pet example, as Lola just discussed, we have the pat method that we can override, but let's talk about those meow and bark methods. In our code, we don't want to always have to check whether it's a cat so we know to call the meow method, or check if it's a dog so we know to call the bark method. Because if we do that, it means we have to add all this extra checking logic and have to write different code depending on what the object is. And it just adds unnecessary stuff to our code.
Well, what if instead of having different methods, we could just have a single speak method on the parent pet class, and the object itself knows whether to meow or bark depending on if it's a cat or a dog? Well, that is what happens with polymorphism.
Polymorphism is the ability of an object to take on many forms, like a cat or a dog. And the most common use in OOP is when a parent class reference is used to refer to a child class object. Like if you just refer to the pet class in your code, but the code is smart enough and knows that you're talking about a dog object, so it knows to bark instead of meow.
We love smart code. So in our virtual pet example, we'd create a speak method in our parent class pet, and then our cat and dog children classes would each implement their own logic for this method so that cats can meow and dogs can bark. This is great because it means that when our program needs to interact with any pet, it can call the speak method and the pet itself knows whether to bark or meow because it knows if it's a cat or a dog.
Basically, polymorphism lets you treat different objects, cats and dogs in this case, in a similar way, even though they have their own unique behaviors. And this allows our code to have flexibility, since you can reuse the same function between classes and customize it to the behavior you need.
And that is the final core principle of OOP, bringing us to the end of what may be the most jargon-filled episode of Hot Girls Code yet. Today, we broke down object-oriented programming, a programming paradigm or programming style, all about treating the things in our code as objects that we create from classes. And these objects have attributes to describe them and methods to carry out actions.
We also spoke about the four principles of OOP. Firstly, encapsulation, where we keep our data and some of our methods private and only expose some things to other objects. Abstraction, where we only expose high-level important stuff to other objects and hide away our messy, complicated inner worlds. Inheritance, where we utilize what our parent class gives us to help us reuse code. And finally, polymorphism, where we can call our parent's class's method and get our child class's behavior.
Our next episode is all about being your authentic self at work, so be sure to tune in when that new episode drops.
If you enjoyed this episode, we would really appreciate it if you could share it with your friends or on social media to help us spread the word and get Hot Girls Code to more wonderful women. Feel free to also leave a rating and subscribe to Hot Girls Code wherever you get your podcasts. You can also follow us on Instagram, Threads, and TikTok under @hot_girls_code to keep up to date with the podcast and learn more about the tech industry, software development, and being a woman in tech.
Thanks for listening.